Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. I am Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Jason, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm feeling great because there is the slightest bit of lull in peak TV right now.
Really?
Slightest bit.
Mm-hmm. Is it like a holiday slowdown? Is that what's happening?
Traditionally, it is a holiday slowdown, but part of it is there's less. And now that we've got our Dan helping out and doing TV criticism, he picked up The Wiz the other night, which was great. Thank you, Dan, for doing
Thanks, Dan.
That. And he liked it, which was good.
I heard from a lot of people who said that they thought it was pretty good.
It seemed to go well. And I am doing a couple of reviews and plotting, like Dan, my massive year-end list. That's about it right now.
No, that's good. It's good that you get a respite so you can do the list. So I hear you had a mishap with your year-end list.
Oh, yeah, I did. And I did one for HitFix, and I've done that for years now. Usually critics do one, two, or three different ones, maybe including their own. And so I woke up one morning and was like, wow, I laughed off one of my favorite dramas.
So you've just totally wrecked Alan Sepinwall's poll.
I'm sure he got it and thought, wow, interesting list of dramas, because there's a pretty big one not on there. Tim being harsh, I think it's probably what he said. But it, you know what it was? It was writing everything down, doing my research, and thinking that I had nailed everything, which I'm sure I didn't. I always have that worry that I'm forgetting something. James Poniewozik from New York Times, formerly of Time magazine, said on Twitter that his great worry is that it'll be something from the wrong year. So we all have our little worries.
Yeah, sure.
I'm compiling stuff right now, going back. And actually, through part of the slowdown, Jason, over the Thanksgiving week and into this sort of like pre-Christmas lull, is that I've used the time to actually do work and catch up on shows that I didn't get to finish.
Imagine.
Yes. And you know what? I will just say this real briefly. I know we've got a lot of stuff jammed in there. The benefit of going back and finishing things and going deeper dive into shows either that I didn't review or only watched the first few is I really like, despite all of its faults, I really like Sense8.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I've only watched like the first three of those, and I've heard from people who really liked it, and I just sort of haven't gotten back to it because there's been other stuff. But interesting. That's cool.
Yeah,
that's good to
know. Plowed through all 12.
That's a nerdy show there too.
It is.
You got your Wachowskis and your J. Michael Straczynskis involved in that one.
Very nerdy. A lot of sex too, though. So that's
that's
helps.
True. A lot of sex. I did notice that too.
Yeah.
The speaking of nerdy stuff, there's a couple new nerdy shows coming, and you're actually going to review the one of them, the Childhood's End, which is coming to Sci-Fi based on the Arthur C. Clarke novel, is in your on deck circle, right?
Yes, I am just finishing up the watching. And I'm through like a night and a little bit more than that. You know what? It's fine. And unless it gets a lot better in the rest of the second night, my review will probably be, you know what? This is probably not for me because it's a little too sci-fi-y. Huh. In that I think people who liked the book and who like that kind of sci-fi are going to be like, yeah, this is kind of cool. What an interesting concept, which is what I did for the great part of it. But there's just not enough freaking out.
Wow.
That's my problem.
More freaking out.
Need more realism. More freaking out.
This is all part of this like Sci-Fi Channel actually kind of recommitting to sci-fi, because after Childhood's End, they're also running The Expanse, which is based on a series of recent... Childhood's End, a classic sci-fi work from, I think, the 70s? It's a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And then The Expanse was written... These books, it's five books now, I think. One released every year for the last 5 years by these two guys, including George R. R. Martin's writing assistant, who clearly got the memo about how you build a novel series and sell it to television. Mm-hmm. Although, unlike George R. R. Martin, they write a novel every year, so you could actually theoretically just keep it going. Are you going to watch that, is Dan going to review
The Expanse? I think he might have done it already. I'm not sure he was a big fan of it. I think he was just like meh. But I didn't actually. And no offense, Dan, if you're listening, which I'm sure he's not, but I did not read that particular review. So got to catch up on my reviews.
The bottom line is familiar but has space to grow. So it sounds like a kind of a middling review. I'll tell you, I saw the pilot and thought it was fantastic, but I have read the books and I really like the books.
Oh, okay. All right, that makes sense. Did you But you liked the pilot a lot.
I really liked it. Like, watched it twice, liked it. I thought it was very good. And I think, again, you know, you're like you said about not enough freaking out. It's like some people want to watch shows with spaceships and stuff, and some people don't, and that's fine. But it was not quite Battlestar Galactica level, I would say, especially since the first regular episode of Galactica was a real kind of gripping thriller. And this is based on a novel, and so it is setting up a lot of stuff, and so it takes a little bit to get going, but you know, it worked. It totally worked for me. There's people in spaceships. There are some subverted expectations, like you get in a pilot, like we were talking about, where you do things that are unexpected in a pilot, and people think it's a show about this, and it turns out it's not. And there's like a noir space detective who wears a hat, which I kind of love, actually.
Wow. So okay.
So I liked it a lot. We'll see how the series goes, but I thought the pilot was pretty cool, and I will fully admit that I know the story and I know where it's going, and so that's coloring my judgment. But I was really happy with it, so I'm looking forward to that. And they're double premiering that. They're running the first episode's available online. You can actually watch it on YouTube or iTunes for free right now. But that episode is airing, and then I guess the next day they're airing episode two. So that, you know, it's an interesting promotion that they're doing, knowing that they've got kind of a nerd audience who's looking forward to it. But I liked it. I'm really excited about it. I think it could be very good.
Good to hear. Okay. Yeah. If it retains its quality, let me know, and I'll add it to my list.
Uh-huh. I'll let you know. I'll keep my finger on the pulse of the Expanse. Hey, speaking of lists, one of the things that I heard a lot of TV critics grousing about is the late premiere of Transparent season 2, because everybody was anticipating it would probably make the list. Your review popped up about Transparent season 2. So how is it?
It's great. It's fantastic. And it definitely is on my list. And I know a lot of, I think everybody will actually, I mean, critics are grousing about it because a lot of them had to put their stuff in early. They had either lead time or they had special TV year-end sections that I know THR is going to do this as well. But I watched them early. I think it actually drops on December 8th for everybody. But it's fantastic. It is they're, you know, the Pfefferman clan. They're screwed up as usual. And it's a beautifully shot beginning. I wrote about that in my review. In fact, praising Jill Soloway as a director, not just the series creator and the writer. The cast is great. It's a whole new set of hurdles this year. I suggest anybody who's not watching it, and I am a little bit dubious about the numbers. I won't go into that. I'm just wondering. I kept thinking everybody's been watching it because everybody's talking about it, but I have run into so many people who are like, yeah, I heard about that, but I haven't seen it. So you should go back and start season one. And but yes, yeah, season two picks up. It's great. I think I watched the first three or four. I can't remember, but barreled through them, and they are fantastic episodes.
Well, the nice thing about being on a streaming service is that if you can get Transparent season two, you can watch Transparent season one, right?
Right, exactly. 100%.
Like, mm-hmm. if this show is available, you can watch the whole thing. You don't have to go somewhere else. It's not available. It's all on Amazon. You can just get it all.
Exactly. So it's I people should do it. I mean, it's fantastic, right. And I love the level of depth that they're getting into in season two. So same old greatness. This is the short story.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. You know, sophomore seasons, you never know.
Oh, you never know. Absolutely. But this one is spot on.
You got anything else that you're churning on your list stuff. Is anything else popping up there? Any surprises for you? Or is it just the busy work of creating these big lists of the best of the year?
Yeah, I think it was, for me, the surprise probably was Sense8. I definitely wanted to go back and check in on that.
I don't think you'll find a more ambitious, I mean, maybe like Game of Thrones, but even that, more ambitious production than Sense8, given that they shot it all over the world and then, you know, out of sequence, like a really big movie, and then put it all together, that it's a truly like international production for Netflix. I think that, you know, that certainly it's super ambitious.
It's pretty amazing. I have to say that I was stunned at how much money looks like it's been put into it. Hmm. So the surprises, I think, Jason, other than me forgetting a pretty big drama, which, well, the great news is it's practice until I do THR.
Yeah, it's not on your list. It's Hitfix's list of you, whatever.
I'll have fixed that by then. No worries. you know, there was not many surprises other than, like, I went back and I found that I found that I liked more comedies this year than I thought I was going to like. I kept thinking, oh, I can people this entire top 10 with dramas, and I probably could. But, you know, look, I mean, there's so many stuff. Master of None is fantastic. Catastrophe on Amazon is great. Casual on Hulu. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I mean, there's so many ones. And don't forget, I like Red Oaks as well, also on Amazon. So those are the ones I went back and rediscovered that I had watched earlier. And it's particularly resonant with Catastrophe and Casual. Those are the ones that really surprised me. Yeah,
Catastrophe is really good. I've only watched the first two or three of those, but that's really good. I finally got through. We got through the whole first season of You're the Worst, and now I'm deep into season two of that now.
Yes,
and that's so great too.
Yeah, it is. It is. That's definitely high on the list.
Yeah, there's a bunch of times of confusion. There's just a bunch of good stuff out there. It's I mean, Sense8 is a good example of a show that I actually liked, and then I just stopped watching it because there's other stuff.
I sent out a tweet earlier saying that, you know, not that I was ever, I mean, other than the pilot, a big fan of the Affair, because we know I had huge issues with that. But I was following The Affair, and then I got bored, and I said, you know what? Too much TV, can't follow you, don't like you, you're annoying me. On the other hand, I am watching more Homeland, and other than that stupid Carrie episode with her going off her meds, I think has been rather remarkably consistent this year, surprisingly.
Interesting. I'll have to check it out. Get back on the horse.
Yeah, and the only surprise I will say on these lists, Jason, is that I found it very easy to pick my number one.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Is it usually a real problem to figure out the, you know, because that's, you got to pick one, right? If you got to pick what is the best show right now, I would think that would be a hard choice.
Yes, that is very hard. It's been harder in years past. I think there are two shows that are going to be 1-2 on most lists. Wow. But for me, I just thought this was clearly superior and completely different, but clearly superior, and it was easy for me to make the pick.
So when are we going to get a chance to see your lists? When do they drop?
Well, that's a good point, because earlier this week, I think on Wednesday, my head exploded. You might have heard it. It was shattered and
is that what that was?
Uh-huh, it was that. It was like a spaceship reentering Earth. My editor had suggested in a note to Dan and I that we turn our top 10 lists in, and that we do, like, he had suggested switching up the way, like, I do dramas and maybe do whatever, and then Dan does the other ones. And so that was my head exploding, saying, oh no, I don't now, nor have I ever, nor will I ever do a top 10 list. And there's too many shows. And I reiterated to him that I'm going to have a best drama list and a best comedy list and a best network list, because I think they're so different. And that those lists are going to be very long and not in the 10 zone. So he was like, okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to freak you out. Do what you want. But we probably are going to drop those online as early as like the 12th, maybe. So in the middle of the month, probably.
All right. Wow. Maybe we'll... I look forward to going over them with you once they're
available. Yeah, that'll be fun. And then you can say, hey, you forgot this one.
Yeah, because you're teasing it now, so that's exciting. Because we just don't know. You're like, it was an easy pick for number one, but I'm not going to tell you what number one is.
I know. I've held beautiful. I've holding steady on that one.
Beautiful. Tim, we have to take a break because we have a sponsor. It's true, we do. We have a sponsor. This is a sponsor read for Mac Weldon. Now, Mac Weldon is a website, MacWeldon. That is all about, I'll just say it, socks and underwear. It's true. These used to be boring stocking stuffers, but now they could be a top-of-the-line gift with the super high-quality materials and craftsmanship of Mac Weldon. Mac Weldon holiday packs are not just a gift that every man needs. It's the gift every man is going to be excited to get, because Mac Weldon has smart design, beautiful premium fabrics, and a super easy shopping experience. I have purchased and am wearing, in fact, right now, I know this is a little too much information, I am wearing right now underpants and socks from Mac Weldon. They are, I can say, super high quality materials. They're very nice. And their online store, super easy to shop in. I went there, I picked some socks. I picked some little stripy socks that I like very much. And some underpants too. In my size, there's a sizing chart. And then I was able to add those to my cart and ship them out really fast. They're naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. If you are a stinky person like me, that's a good thing. And Mac Weldon always wants you to be comfortable. If you don't like your first pair, Just keep it. They'll refund your money. No questions asked. If you don't like it, you don't have to worry about it. So give it a try. Mack Weldon's got great underwear, socks, and shirts. They look good. They perform well. It's good for working out. It's good for going to work. It's good for going out on a date. It's good for everything in life. Be prepared and be comfortable in great underwear, socks, and shirts from Mack Weldon. So go to MackWeldon.com. That's MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using the promo code TV Talk, the name of the show, sort of TV Talk. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring TV Talk Machine. So, I've got some letters. You want to go to the letters?
I do.
There's a lot going on. And actually, the first letter, we've got some installments. We got some Agent X Watch. We got some Not a Thing that's happening. We got some Cop Not a Cop threading through these.
Oh,
so there's a lot of good stuff here.
Uh-huh.
But I'm going to start with a letter that also is going to reveal behind the curtain of the TV Talk Machine,
okay,
which is from Jenny down the block, the Almost Area Code record, the 650.
Uh-huh.
She says, after last week's Walking Dead that showed what happened with Glenn, I eagerly awaited the latest TVTM when I could enjoy the holidays, giving thanks for the rant I was about to receive. However, although the podcast was as entertaining as always, I was shocked you didn't even mention The Walking Dead or Glenn. What happened? Surely you have some thoughts. Please let us know what you think now that you've seen Glenn's fate. Now, I know you have opinions about this, but I also want to reveal exclusively here, simultaneously worldwide, that we recorded the post-Thanksgiving episode the week before and just pretended that we were stuffed with turkey, and now it can be revealed that that was us not doing an episode Thanksgiving week by pre-taping. And that's why we didn't react with anger, I'm sure, and fury about the stunt that The Walking Dead pulled in its mid-season finale. So anger, rage, yes?
Yes, in fact, but it was, to me, it was...
and the guy made excuses. He's like, but only the critics care about this stuff. The fans loved it. What?
What? I know. It was... you know, it was disappointing because I like Gimple and I think that he does good work. I think it's, you know, I didn't have a super outrage because I was already outraged prior and I had already written columns saying that if this does happen, if Glenn is alive, then this show can no longer be taken serious as a...
Right, you put your cards on the table before the reveal happened.
And by the way, I'm backing that up. It is certainly not anywhere in my top 10 dramas. So I will see how far it falls when I continue to do that list. And, you know, I just thought, okay, you know, you're so insulated from reality that you can do this and you can get away with it. So good for you. The bad part is it might've been network mandated. They might've been talks and maybe he folded. I have no idea. Or maybe Gimple did it on his own. Who knows? But I will say this. I think critical acclaim was important to someone like him and people associated with writing the show, but they are so popular that they're insulated, but now they've lost that. I think most critics now are so frustrated that they're not taking The Walking Dead seriously. I will watch it. I've watched it since then. I like watching it, but there literally is no threat anymore that worries me. Can't take it seriously.
Yeah. It's too bad because you feel like it's, I mean, this is a little bit like what we talked about with The Affair. It's like, is it cheating the viewers? Is it playing fair? Is it playing by its own rules or not?
Yeah,
these are the new rules, right? So they are what they are.
Yeah. It's me. It was okay. Fine. You chose to do this and you know what? You didn't even have to do that. It's just the way they did it is terrible to drag it out. I mean, I would have been okay if you make it seem for 10-5 minutes that in the same episode that Glenn's alive, and then we find that he's climbed under the dumpster and survived against all odds, all of the odds against him. Then I would have said, okay, you cheated me for 15 minutes and I worried about him, but not, don't do it over 4 weeks. Then you're going to, then you just forget about it.
Mm.
Yeah.
I've got something here. Let me...
So
this.
Sorry, Jenny. We were cheating. We recorded early. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. But that's, we love you enough to do an episode for Thanksgiving. So this sound you're hearing?
I like that. Is it a mailbag?
It is an envelope stuffed full of small bills and change that arrived at my door this week, along with a couple other things. I'm going to read you the letter that accompanied it. Are you ready?
Okay. We have not rehearsed this. This is the first I've heard of this.
Dear Mr. Snell, we at Agent X are excited to provide you with the necessary alcoholic beverages to enjoy the show in the same physical state as it was often written. Enclosed, please find your first libation expense reimbursement of $36.60 US. Club Bev points may be retained by you as an additional incentive. Also enclosed are two limited edition Agent X action t-shirts for you and your partner Tim Goodman, respectively, designed to be worn while watching our fine program, performing your podcast, or under dress jackets at cocktail parties to project a laissez-faire hipster attitude. We welcome further alcoholic expenses under the previously agreed stipulations and are also prepared to honor bills from Costco or any similar bulk purchasing club. Sincerely, William Blake Heron, creator, Agent X. And I do have the Agent X Season 1 t-shirt right here, and there's one for you, too. So.
That is tremendous. I will wear that with pride. That is, you know what? You know, I'm tempted now to throw it on my best of the year-end list because I love the show. I love watching it. It's fun.
It is fun.
It's escapist, and I don't think you're ever going to find a better creator of a show.
No, he
gets it, and he's
killing it. He posted a tweet the other week that was Tim and Jason mention Agent X on TVTM, and the viewers go up 50,000. Coincidence? Probably, but my understanding is you forwarded to me. He also sent you a letter, but this is more importantly, the creator of Agent X is directly addressing listener Hunter's questions from our previous podcast.
Which is genius.
You remember, because Hunter said it's not a thing. Historically, the vice president didn't even live in the Naval Observatory until the 70s, and the vice president lived in a hotel before that. And so there was a whole lot of fact-checking that Hunter was doing. So William Blake Heron wrote in to say, I'm delighted, as always, to hear Agent X referenced, and even more delighted to hear Hunter's questions. We at Agent X have eagerly anticipated his concerns and have been waiting impatiently for him to surface in order to share our cleverness. In preface, Hunter should understand it is an irrefutable television truism that when the brightest people are assembled in a room to compromise on story points, only the most awesome ideas are adopted. Basically, we divide all plausibility concerns into two categories. One, things that we can somewhat rationally explain, and two, things that we can irrationally explain through a combination of sophist logic and magical thinking. Regarding the first category, while vice presidents have had various residences, the fireplace mantle has always been a constant fixture, transported to each domicile and equipped with a tunnel entrance. The tunnel system itself is a work in progress. Sharp observers will note various brick and stone differences in portions of the network to imply generational contrast. So then who built these passages over the centuries and maintains them? You'll be shocked at the simplicity and plausibility of the answer, a secret web of descendants of the Sons of Liberty. This component of our mythology will be explored further in Season 2 if our audience test research into Gates anyone gives a damn. Under the second category would fall the issue of how quickly our characters navigate the underground tunnels to appear all over the city. We at Agent X actually have two answers to appeal to both the cerebral members of our audience as well as our Joe and Jane six packs. Intellectual viewers will note our peripatetic tunnel montages bear a striking resemblance to the time jump cuts employed by French Nouvelle Vague auteur Robert Bresson in his seminal film L'Argent. To our popcorn crowd, we refer to Bayes' razor, a mathematical formula discovered by noted audience theoretician Michael Bay. Simply put, a preposterous concept may be presented to an audience if it satisfies the following equation: audience limbic pleasure plus belief in unicorns divided by audience attention span greater than audience sobriety plus proclivity toward atheism. As for the construction of a new Russian embassy, new embassies get built from time to time. That's television. The real question is, why is it so poorly guarded? The answer is, we didn't know if we were going to be an 8 o'clock show or a 9 o'clock show and wanted to limit the body count. I hope Hunter keeps watching, as we have gone to great pains to design his dream show, William Blake Heron. So there you go. Agent X watch for this week.
I think, by the way, Hall of Fame first ballot for any showrunner and series creator in history. I cannot stress the fact that I want any stronger that I want Agent X season 2.
William Blake Heron explains it all.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go back and tell people that this is, it has to be renewed because this show's fun. Just give into it. It's fun.
All right. Moving on from that and our fraud of fake recording an episode after Thanksgiving.
You got money sent to you. That is amazing.
So I went to BevMo and I bought some box wine as per his recommendation and some beer. And I actually, I bought a bunch of beer and stuff, and I decided to separate check for the one box of beer and the one box of wine because I didn't want to sit him with my entire beverages and more bill. And he reimbursed me in small bills. And loose change. It's amazing.
I love that. That's the best.
let's see. From Twitter, the Obald says, I'm browsing Amazon just now and I noticed a box set of numbers, or as some of us call it, num-threers.
Yes.
Six seasons of Cop, Not a Cop. Good point.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, see, Cop, not a Cop.
Wow, I forgot about Numb 3 years.
Yeah, Cal in the 0131 writes
International.
In, yeah, this is a not a thing. Worse than the sound effects is when people put a phone to their head and the screen stays on, showing the lock or home screen, which means that the phone is not actually... When you put an iPhone next to your head, the screen goes off. So when they put it next to their head and the screen's still on, it's because the phone is not actually in use and it's fake.
Yes.
So that's a good one, Cal. That one bugs me. Gary Rogers writes in to suggest that from the classic holiday special, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, that Hermie and Rudolph, while not cop, not a cop, are dentist, not a dentist. I would say, really, it's more reindeer, not a reindeer, but we'll go with it.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah, don't mess with my favorite Christmas shows that will be held today. Yeah.
So this is... We got some stuff about this is sort of not a thing, but it's also Dick Wolf related.
Oh yes, the aptly named Dick Wolf.
The masked scheduler Preston Peckman did a post on his blog where he revealed the secret of how Law and Order SVU got its name, which was like literally that it was called Sex Crimes and nobody wanted to buy ads on a show called Sex Crimes, and it was just Dick Wolf doing Law and Order with the serial number shaved off, and the response was basically, why don't we just call this Law and Order SVU instead? It says it's about the Special Victims Unit, and thus began what he calls the colonization of NBC, because yes. Dick Wolf is he buys his colons by the box.
He does.
So anyway, so Sam in the 601 wrote in, mm-hmm. and said, you guys hit on the way to rejuvenate NBC dramas without even realizing it. Three separate discussions all came together in my mind. NBC can rebuild all around Dick Wolf's latest series, Chicago insert industry here, and combine it with Cop Not a Cop. Oh. And the kind of mega crossover shows being done by Marvel and DC with a nod toward the golden era of soap opera. See, it's all coming together now.
Oh, boy.
To that end, I've taken the liberty of outlining the next 5 years of Dick Wolf's Chicago empire. One, Chicago Clean. A super genius who hates the man works for a cleaning service that has city contracts. At night, he rifles through the files of doctors, detectives, and fire marshals to help solve cases. Spinoff of Chicago PD.
Okay.
Two, Chicago News. A BuzzFeed-like online media organization that covers Chicago politics. Combines the best parts of House of Cards, The Wire, and The Killing Season 1. Spinoff of Chicago Clean. 3. Chicago Politics. The West Wing comes to Chicago City Hall. Bradley Whitford channels a more likable Rahm Emanuel character as mayor. Spinoff of Chicago News. 4. Chicago Mortuary. Dick Wolf is not afraid to kill off lead stars, so think of the regular crossover events when the psychic funeral home director gets to console the family of a beloved character and ease the long-buried pain caused by a secret the loved ones feared died with the main character of another show. Spinoff of whatever show Dick Wolf decides an actor isn't getting that contract extension because it would cut too deep into the bottom line. That takes us to 2020, when Dick Wolf and NBC decide to go full-on soap opera and run Chicago Lives 5 nights a week by mixing all the shows together.
Oh, that's good.
Thank you, Sam, in the 601.
That is good. Mortuary, that's a slam dunk.
Don't give Dick Wolf ideas. You're only encouraging Dick Wolf by doing that.
You're only encouraging him because he will steal those ideas.
All right. This is more Dick Wolf and not a thing. So,
okay.
Sarah, we have two letters from Sarah's about Dick Wolf.
Okay.
Sarah in the 317, that's our friend Indy Sarah.
Okay. Yes.
Says, I'm on the IT staff of a large hospital network, so I'm tuned to watching doctors interact with technology on TV. So this is leading into Dick Wolf. We're going to start with a not a thing. In most hospital shows and episodes, doctors can be seen relying on paper charts, which is not the way the world works anymore. On the off chance there is a computer in a scene, it's usually so that someone nefarious can access a patient's data, which is apparently as easily as jiggling a mouse and staring at the screen with one's mouth agape. My job is harder than that. And then Sarah in the 707 says...
Is this a new Sarah?
A new Sarah.
In wine country.
I'm forced to watch 3 hours of Dick Wolf's Chicago trifecta a week in exchange for free rent while working part-time in a chain of health clinics running their EHR and other IT and attending graduate school for public health. You could say that I'm the queen geek of our health clinics. So we have two health IT Sarahs, but they're in different area codes. I don't even know what's happening.
That is very odd. Spinoff.
Yeah. Chicago Med writers, you may regret how I earned my free rent watching mediocre TV after dinner with my mother without complaint. So one, HIPAA. Even our elderly patients know we cannot just start sharing a patient's health information without documented authorization from the patient for each specific person. Yet Chicago Med's writing staff thought it was so awesome to have Dr. Dark, Rich, and Handsome, a.k.a. Tommy Merlin from Arrow Season 1, start discussing a patient impaled in the chest by a fallen chandelier surrounded by people in the middle of the hospital cafeteria. No. Even the most basic HIPAA training shows the big no-no of discussing a patient's embarrassing hemorrhoids in a public area where others may overhear. He's doing it with the patient's employers, who just happen to be Dark, Rich, and Handsome's sister and father. So this is not, and it goes on. Trust me, it's a bad idea. And then two, as the other Sarah said, clipboard, paper, and where aware the computers, even the most small rural hospitals have some kind of electronic health records now, thanks to ARRA and the High Tech Act, Uncle Sam's carrot and stick. So clipboards stuck on the end of hospital beds where the CT images are digital. There are VR headsets and floor-to-ceiling displays, isolate torso, and every monitor is computerized and state-of-the-art. BS, these doctors would go to the nearest computer to review imaging and results, maybe on a computer on wheels or on a tablet. So so no good. But she goes on, I know you and Jason thought you had beaten Dick Wolf to his next franchise member of Chicago Liquor Store, but sadly he's already done that. As someone who is forced to watch all of the Chicago franchise, we were able to accurately predict both the pilots of Chicago Med and Chicago PD a year in advance. Of course, I was indoctrinated into the Dick Wolf system by 18 years of watching Law & Order. Our next prediction is the next franchise member will feature the bar Molly's, owned by several of the firefighters on Chicago Fire. There's a developing storyline involving some gentrifying neighbors who moved from Portland complaining about noise. The psychiatrist from Chicago Med hangs out there, and anything that needs medication with alcohol on Chicago PD and Chicago Fire occurs at Molly's. Hey, sharing stocks sets across series saves money, Dick Wolf. While I didn't think they could get away with Chicago Bar, we hereby predict that by 2017, there will be a pilot for another public service profession. My sister votes for Chicago Public Works. Well, I think it will have something to do with the waterfront, and they will also hang out at Molly's. Sarah in the 707.
Wow.
That is some knowledge. That is some Dick Wolf. I am surprised that somebody is watching the Dick Wolf Chicago shows, but there it is. That's why he's making them.
She's being forced to do it, basically.
Yeah, well, she gets something in return, I suppose. I'm not quite sure what it is, but amazing.
I think we have the smartest Sarahs of any podcast.
I think we do. I think you're right. I think our Sarahs are champions. Yeah. They'd be at the top of the top
Sarahs. We have the best
Sarahs.
Hobos by far.
By far.
By far.
No doubt.
And then now that's going to be, yeah, now featuring the best Sarahs. Your mm-hmm. Sarahs are subpar. We can say that's other podcasts.
Yeah, other podcasts do not have the Sarahs we
have. Do you even have a Sarah? We have a lot of Sarahs.
We could debate our favorite Sarahs in various areas now.
Oh my God, that's going to be good. I'm going to go Indie Sarah. She's my favorite.
She's pretty great. Okay, this is from Jennifer in the 650.
Okay.
And she's got some questions for you.
All right.
Do you think The Daily Show will stay on the air? I watched the first 3 weeks. I know Trevor isn't John, and I want to give him a chance. I didn't think he was funny with John, but since appearing with John makes everything better, I didn't pay that much attention to him. Since I stopped watching the end of October, I don't know how the show is doing. Does it stand a chance to stay on, or will they just change hosts again?
I think it'll stay on. I think it'll be interesting because I think that we're not close to it yet, but I think there's about a 6 months. I would say it wouldn't last a year, but I think there's going to be about a 6 month period where, people who were just by habit watching it, and then checking out whether Trevor Noah was their cup of tea. I think they're going to bail for most of the part. But there are others who really do like him a lot. I don't think they're watching in traditional television, so that will affect the ratings. And so it's going to take about 6 months before you start to see an impact, a true impact. So 6 to 8 months. I don't think he'll go off the air, though. It's just, I don't know what they're going to do. And I think that they're going to suffer big ratings declines in their entire late night.
Mm. Right. So it may still, this is like when people talk about Stephen Colbert's ratings and, you know, is he beating Fallon and Kimmel, or is he in second, or is he in third place? And it's like, well, that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is how much money is CBS making in that spot? And,
right.
You know, Comedy Central might have to recalibrate their expectations for that slot. And it might still be, you know, good enough for them that they don't want to make a change. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. I still think we're a little too early on
that. Jennifer also asks, you asked, this is sort of a not a thing. TV shows that do poor representations of professions. How about teachers? Not all high school or college teachers are young, white, blonde women who are size 2 and somehow always empathize with their students in a suggestive sexual way. Not all teachers over 40 are black women who are there to mother and take care of the lost white boy whose parents don't understand him. Can there ever be a representation of a black high school teacher or college professor over 40 who look and behave like the teachers I know? Make Viola Davis the representation of black women teachers. I am closer to her image than any of the other directors that's out there, except for killing people, and I don't get to sleep with hot men. Happy Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, solstice, etc. Jennifer in the 650. Very nice.
Excellent.
It's true. Teachers, there are like 3 types of teachers. It's
yes.
true.
I know Jennifer, and she has nailed that now.
Yeah.
I know her via Twitter. She has nailed that. She's got that down. Uh-huh. That was a very, very astute observation about teachers.
Yeah. Okay, we got Dan from the 615. This is a not a thing.
Okay.
And I love this letter. I love this letter. Years ago, my wife pointed out that she hates seeing people drinking from empty cups on TV, and now it's like a game for us to spot. It totally bums us out when some of our favorite shows constantly do this. We are currently making our way through Gilmore Girls, and 4 seasons in, it's the only thing about the TV show that drives us crazy. They drink a lot of coffee. Why can't they all just sip water or tea? And I want to go with this. The empty Starbucks cup held as if it is full kills me. Supergirl is a good example of this right now because she's always bringing yes. Calista Flockhart her drinks, but it happens on every show. They don't put liquid in the cup, even like some sort of a safety thing where it can't spill, but it's weighted like liquid,
right.
And people just hold them around, and it's very obviously a completely empty cup that they're pretending is full of coffee. It's like gravity, people. It's an empty cup. We can tell it's an empty cup.
I believe that Miles McNutt on Twitter, now he's sort of in academia. He's a well-versed in media and television especially. And Miles has gone on and on about the Empty Cup Awards. And there is a leader out there.
Okay, good. Dan,
yeah.
Check out Miles
yes.
for your Empty Cup needs.
MC for McNutt. N-U-T-T.
Can there not be, somebody should just make like a weight or like a weighted cup that prop people could use so that people are gesturing with something that isn't going to spill on them.
A weighted one that won't spill, because I think the worry is that even just a little bit will spill, and then you got to reshoot, and then it's
totally
costs money.
That makes sense, but it's just like put a fake cup that's got like a weight in the bottom, so it's gonna have heft when you lift it. Because otherwise, it's like a somebody on a sci-fi show lifting a boulder or something that's made of foam. It's like, come on, right?
Right.
Except it's with the Starbucks cup. The empty Starbucks cup is the worst.
Yes, right, here's these are very good observations. Astute.
We've got Cassie from the 520 who's got a not a thing. It's two-way text conversations with a blocked or unknown number. It's happening on Jessica Jones. Maybe it's one of Jessica's superpowers. So that's a good one. More phone shenanigans, Cassie from the 520. Thank you. And then we got Jason in the 403, which is, as we know, Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of questions for Tim regarding
this
his end of...
This is Jason, who I met, and this is we are a long time Jason.
Yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Canadian Jason.
Mm-hmm.
A couple questions for Tim regarding his end-of-the-year lists. This is good.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm.
How difficult is it to compare shows for the list that aired at vastly different times? A show like Better Call Saul finished its run in March, while Man in the High Castle was just released and Transparent, season 2. Now that most seasons only run 10 or 13 episodes, it must be harder to remember some of them, especially for the purposes of comparison. So do you go back and like refresh, or do you just have to kind of keep it stored in your mind?
I actually haven't had a problem with remembering what my take is on the sort of qualitative, you know, element rating or ranking of a series. I don't have a problem with that. I actually, so for example, it's actually finishing the show is the hard part. That's so much harder than actually remembering. It's easy for me to remember that on Better Call Saul, I am firmly in the good, not great category, and I spent much of the latter part of that season, the last 4 or 5 episodes, quietly snarking on Twitter to everybody else who was saying that it's the greatest thing, and even somebody said it was as good as Breaking Bad, which also it made my head explode. So, I I think that's a very good show, and it could be great. It was not a great first season. It was it was a really good first season. That's how I remember that. And Man in the High Castle has its own set of problems. So especially in the middle part, getting a little bit slow and slightly boring. But I haven't finished it yet. So that's the big race towards the end.
Yeah.
Everything else, I especially the ones that I've seen all the way through. You know, I love the catastrophe and casual, and sometimes you go back like, and I think shows of that ilk, for example, this is getting kind of wonky, but shows of that ilk, so like Togetherness on HBO is very casual, it's very catastrophe, it's all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So then I'll go back and I'll maybe reread my review and think, it'll click things in my brain and I'll think, okay, yeah, all right. So this, of these very similar series, which one is a notch or so better? Unless there's some writing element that makes it stand out.
It's an interesting, that's the hard part. Interesting challenge there.
Yeah, and also the bottom line, and I think you'll find this with a lot of critics, is I really believe in ranking them in numbers. I don't like the whole in any order. Otherwise, why do it?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to just say, here's 20 shows I liked. No, I want 1 through 20. But I will say that at some point, the difference between 9 and 14, probably infinitesimal.
Mm. You're no stranger to ranking things.
No, I'm not.
So you know how to do this. You know how to put shows in an order.
Yes, I've been ranking full stop for some time. That's an Indie Sarah reference. She'll get that one for sure. Ranking full stop. Okay.
Katie in the 5-10, the 5 and dime.
Yes, hometown.
A fan from the old days finally remembers Benny and marching band music. Question okay, boy Katie. and the reality show known as Bars, where Bay Area bars, including the Hotsy Totsy, would be featured. She says she went to the Hotsy Totsy recently, and it's awesome. And she associates it with the TV talk machine, so it's extra awesome. Anyway, that's her question great. Is, would there ever be a Sopranos spinoff? It goes without saying that without James Gandolfini, it would never be the same, but I would love to see what happened to other characters. Even as I write this, I can feel myself changing my mind because it would be tampering with greatness, but I can't deny I would still love to see it, and I'm sure there's at least some fans that would feel the same. I would love to hear your thoughts.
I don't think David Chase ever wants to do that. I think he's moved on, and David Chase wants to make movies, doesn't want to go back into TV.
Yeah, he doesn't even want to make another HBO show.
No, he's well past that. But specifically to that, Katie, no, I don't think that's ever going to happen. But I will say some people don't mind tampering with it and don't feel like it takes – for example, Vince Gilligan doesn't think that that
Better Call Saul
is in any way taking away from what was the entire greatness of Breaking Bad. Hmm. So, yeah.
Here's Jim from the 707.
Okay, another one. Mm-hmm.
We got, there's so many because we go away for 2 weeks. And this,
do you think
this,
Jim knows Sarah? I don't know.
It's possible.
Mm-hmm. In 707.
Send us some wine.
I'm going to have to start calling her Wine Sarah because they're Indie Sarah and then Wine Sarah.
Yeah,
and
wine,
she's going to
show
right and say, you know, Tim, I don't drink wine. So. Hmm.
This is a good question. Long-time listener, first-time emailer. Sometimes you will mention in an article or on the podcast that a show is single camera or multi-camera. Please give us a little primer on what this means. Either one is better than whether one is better than the other, why the producers or directors choose one or the other. What does that choice say about what they're trying to do? I thought that's a good question.
Yeah, it's actually pretty simple, actually. This almost entirely revolves around sitcoms rather than dramas. You know, Seinfeld is a multicam. Friends, but whereas I'm trying to think of something that's Big Bang Theory multicamera and usually shot in front of a live audience. There's between 3 and 5 cameras, generally 3, sometimes 4.
It's like what you think of as old style TV, where they're on a soundstage and they've got a bunch of cameras and they do it in a take and they keep switching between the cameras.
Yeah, as opposed to like Malcolm in the Middle and if you're watching Master of None or Catastrophe or Casual, those are all single camera, and single camera is basically shot like a movie. It's a point of view. There could be multiple cameras, but they're not set up in a staged environment.
Right.
So just because we say single camera, it doesn't mean like that one camera has to follow them around like, you know, cinema verite. So it's basically, it looks like a movie. There is no laugh track, which is essential. And there is no canned audience laughter, any of that stuff. So it's definitely more of a, and so you also you have to block it. I mean, if you want to get technical, you're blocking it differently. So for example, in a sitcom, somebody, here comes the wacky neighbor. You've got Seinfeld on the couch. You got Jerry, you got Seinfeld on the couch. Maybe you've got somebody behind him. And then Kramer comes in, and then the camera has to be able to catch all three at the same time. And then Kramer has to walk to a certain spot. So all three of them are in that next shot.
Right.
And so that's how they do it. And then as far as single camera, they shoot it much more. The camera moves around much more like a movie camera.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically like the difference between a almost theater related mm-hmm. approach versus a film related approach.
Yes.
And originally everything was multi-camera on TV for sitcoms, because it was sort of like from the live TV days. And now today's multi-cams, you know, they're recording all of the cameras, and they will use sometimes different takes and all sorts of things. It's not like they've got a live switcher like on a talk show, but it's still a very different kind of format. And the live studio audience is the dead giveaway.
I can see Jay Lohr. I can hear him in the background. Hey, compare it to theater.
Yeah,
theater.
It is. It's like, it's totally like theater. I mean, and they have to pause for the applause from the audience and stuff mm-hmm. too. I mean, that was Kramer would come in and then he'd stand there
and wait. Yeah,
which is, you know, that's actually, you know, that's my biggest complaint about the Colbert Late Show is that because he appears twice, there's. We've got the 30-second skip button on our TiVo. It's more than a minute that he just stands there and they're applauding mm-hmm. him. And, mm-hmm. and then there's usually 30 seconds to a minute when he's at the desk where they're applauding him. It's just too much applause.
It is a frequent complaint of people. I mean, I don't think he's full of himself, but it is other critics have pointed out that it's too much.
Yeah, I mean, that's your prime time, right? That first 15 mm-hmm. minutes of the show, you need a packet full of stuff. And, you know, if the audience just is insane for you, then that's great. But have them get it out before you start the show.
I think that'll, by the way, just as a note, put a pin in this one and we'll come back and visit it, because I think you'll see that change.
Yeah, I suspect that. But that's the I think they did the clever thing where he does the pre-credits, don't call it a monologue, and then he's mm-hmm. at the desk, which he's much more comfortable at, I think. Although mm-hmm. I think he's fine as a monologue, but they inverted what, you know, Letterman would always throw it to Paul Schaefer and go to the desk. And Colbert, he throws it to the open, and then they play the theme music, and then he's at the desk. Mm-hmm. So it's a subtle change, but the difference is that you've got two applause cues.
Yep.
And
that is a problem.
Yeah. Still like that show, though. I think
Me
it's
too.
Good. I think he's very good.
Me too.
Lillian from the 213 has an end of year list comment.
Okay.
I'm noticing nearly everyone has The Americans on their list. It's a critically beloved series, and as a TV connoisseur, I like to think that I'm watching all the best shows. Even in this age of peak TV, there are really only a core set, 20 or 30 maybe, of shows that are must watch. My problem is I can't stand The Americans. I've tried to watch it, really. I watched every episode attentively, no laundry folding, no second screen, and well, I don't like it. While I really like a few of the supporting characters, I cannot stand the leads, the wigs, the one-note expressions. Do they ever look anything but aggrieved? The same plot over and over again, they kill some witness under tragic circumstances and just manage to escape. What does this say about their marriage? Dun, dun, dun. And what the hell was the ending of last season? The problem is that I like to keep up with all the great TV, and I worry that if I drop this show, I'll somehow miss out on the great TV conversation. On the other hand, considering the ratings, maybe it's not the show that we're all watching. Help me. Can I stop watching The Americans? I can certainly replace it with something that I'll probably like more. Lillian from the 213.
Oh, Lillian, I'm a fan of The Americans, but I get what you're saying as far as you're feeling like you're an outlier and you want to stop, and everybody's like, oh, The Americans, including me. Yeah, I think you could stop, absolutely. There's so much other stuff to love, and you'll be fine. You have my blessings to part ways, because if you don't like it by now, you're never going to like it. So now you're just torturing yourself. I will say, though, that she is right. And I wrote a column about it. That finale on the season 3 finale, woo, bad, very bad. I was very disappointed about that. So, I did not like that. Thought that was a huge mistake. However, I'm still going to watch when they come back.
It's times of confusion. Too much TV. Never watch. Don't stick with something that
yeah,
that
no
you
hate
don't enjoy.
Watching. Yeah. or as Alan Sepinwall likes to put a spin on it, because I hate watching. He calls it hope watching, where you're just hoping it's going to get better. And as I said to Alan, I said, if you're hope watching and it's, you know, the show is bad, you're just wasting your time.
Yeah.
So stop hoping, start hating.
All right, here's Mick. Mick is in the plus 6-1, which is Australia.
Oh, okay.
Worldwide simultaneous.
Yeah, they might be a little tick in front of everybody. He might get it before us. I think we decided that Australia gets it a little tick first.
Oh, wow, that's outrageous. That's going to really anger people everywhere else. Well, they're the first ones to get it on Saturday. Because it's already Saturday there.
Right.
In fact, Mick mentions that. So he says, both my wife and I have a favorite Christmas tradition of watching Bad Santa on Christmas Eve every year. This is the movie with Billy Bob Thornton, and he is a terrible version of Santa. Being an Australian, with the temperature being between 35 to 40 degrees centigrade on Christmas Day, that's hot. It would seem fitting to not like the normal Christmas movies or TV shows that show snow and pine trees, as well as roaring fireplaces and terrible knitted sweaters. Also, eggnog is not a thing, just saying. Love the show every Saturday morning here, and look forward to it every week. Thank you for all your suggestions so far and the warnings on shows to give a wide berth. Keep up the good work. Happy holidays, Mick, and the plus 6-1. Just very nice. See, the Australians, they love us. That's why we released the show there early.
On Saturday.
Saturday morning.
It. Yeah. They think that you think you're getting it later, but they're also a wink wink getting a little bit earlier. I will say this really quickly about Australia. Two things. Eggnog, totally not a thing.
Nope.
But Australia, I'm thinking, I can't even remember who our original letter was, but I was on Twitter and they showed some gigantic, awful creature that it spooked the life out of me.
And it's Australia, right?
It's like a gigantic gecko-like lizard, which is the biggest one that anybody, I guess, has ever seen in Australia, was stuck on the side of the wall at this dude's house. And it's like, oh, God, I can't sleep for weeks now. Thanks, Australia. Never going to visit.
Yeah. You know, my Cal Bears football team is going to play a game in Australia there next year.
Well, God help them, because you can die a lot of ways.
They might die of spider bites.
Spider bites in the water, goddamn monsters.
Yeah, monsters.
There you go. Check the box.
All right. Thank you.
I like Bad Santa too, because, you know, I can't say it. I've already checked the box, but I won't. Okay.
There's that sex scene in the car. Lauren Graham, yeah.
Lauren Graham saying, fuck me, Santa, is pretty amazing.
Check the box. There it is. Thank you. Thank you, Mick. And yes, the Gilmore Girls will never be the same.
A lot of Gilmore Girls buttons on that one, I must say.
Uh-huh. Steve in the 808.
Yes, 808 State, Hawaii. Yep.
Fargo, Season 2, Episode 8. Holy crap. I nominate this entire season for Best Show of 2015. Every episode has been breathtakingly outstanding in writing, directing, acting, musical selection, and above all, cinematography. Everyone needs to be watching this, period. Steve in the 808. That's it.
I agree with Steve.
Yeah.
I agree with Steve. It's fantastic television. It's every episode. Just I'm watching these things sometimes, you know, twice.
Yep.
In the same week, like, you know, I could be using this hour for something else, but no, I'll go watch Fargo again.
Watch Fargo again. Yeah. That's the people, these are the endorsements. You got to listen to this. Okay. We got one more letter.
Okay.
Hobo Eric.
I don't know why I laugh at that. Why am I so easy? I'm a gullible target. Okay. Good.
Hobo Eric is currently reporting to us from the 441. Sporting his summer hobo wear collection. The 441 is the island of Bermuda.
Is he our traveling correspondent?
Well, Hobo Eric's in England, right? And Bermuda is a British possession. I've been to Bermuda. It is a British possession. So he's, you know, he's enjoying Atlantic Ocean life on the island of Bermuda.
Is he wearing Bermuda shorts?
I hope so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, he didn't send a picture.
He did not.
Okay.
Thank goodness. Do not send a picture, Eric.
Jason from Calgary would have had like 5 pictures attached.
A contrasting update on Not a Thing, the dark web. It is a thing, just like the cloud is a thing, but it's just a marketing branding of an existing technology. You can definitely buy stolen credit cards, drugs, and other bad things there using Tor browsers and criminal marketplaces, but it has become a tech story crutch where they attribute things you can't do with it. I think that's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. When we laugh at the dark web, I would say it's because the dark web is used to isolate torsos and things like that, not for actual things that are things. On another topic, my submissions for Cop, Not a Cop. Oh, he's got it all. Veronica Mars, that's good. and iZombie. We mentioned that. Rob Thomas sure does love Cop Not a Cop, and he does very well. Jessica Jones also sort of does it. I don't know. I'm not sure a detective is a cop. There is that cop on Jessica Jones. Well, he's kind of barely a cop, but he's also a cop.
Yeah. He's a private detective, though. Yeah.
Yeah. And he says, if you haven't watched the whole season yet, definitely do it. It's amazingly dark and brutal. I've seen the first four episodes. We did a podcast about it just this week on the Incomparable TV podcast. I like it. I want to see more, but I like it so far.
I will plow through before my list is finished. So much to watch.
And then Hobo Eric goes on now for a question. I've now seen the first top 10 TV episodes list from Time Magazine, which I fully agreed with. I love seeing these lists next to best of lists as they recognize other players with standout episodes. Will you be creating a top 10 episodes list for the year? Or with these times of too much TV, has that become too much of an ask for an overworked bastard?
I've never done that because I can't remember them. And it's literally a memory problem. Yeah. There are other people who are much... Either they have better memories or they are more astute at doing smart things like, hey, this is a really good episode. I will write this down.
Make a note, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been able to do that either.
Oh, my God. I want to be that person, but I can't. I'm still actually looking for a personal assistant to save my life and help me. But no, Dan Feinberg this year is going to do a series of those kind of side lists, and he's going to include me in them, so I will be helping him. We'll be doing it jointly, creating stuff like that. And I'm sure I'll use Dan as a prompt. There's some certain things, you know, you could pick almost any episode of Fargo, et cetera. But yeah, there's certain ones that stand out.
Well, that's the chance. There are standout episodes, but that's the thing. TV, it's like the arc of the season, and shows are good because of the season. And I always had that problem when you pick like what's a good episode of a representative episode of a show. Sometimes it's very hard to do that because it's like, no, it's a good show, and there's good stuff in this one, and that one is different, and this one is also different. And a lot of the Emmy nominations for like best writing are for these weird episodes that are not like the regular show, but they are showcases for something. Doctor Who just had one last week where Peter Capaldi is the only character in it. He's the only speaking part basically for 99% of the show, and it's not representative of the show, but it's a heck of an acting performance and it's a heck of a script, but it's not representative. So that's the other problem, is sometimes you get these best episodes are like not what makes the show good, it's just a novel episode.
Exactly. I believe the cumulative.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Hobo Eric, for returning, and I hope you're having a good time wearing the Bermuda shorts.
A sunscreen, Eric, if you're from England. I know you're kind of pasty, so sunscreen. That's that big yellow ball. It's a danger.
Well, that's true. Coming from England, anything's going to be an improvement. Bermuda's not what most people think it is, though, because it's like North Carolina latitude. It's not in the Caribbean. It's like way up the coast.
Oh,
so okay. It's not quite as warm is what I found when I went there. I was like, this is not tropical. Nope, it's not tropical. Water was actually kind of cold.
New every day on this podcast.
On the TV Talk Machine. We're here with your geography needs. We tell you what's a thing and not a thing. We tell you about cops and not cops. We did a lot. We covered a lot of ground. We learned a lot today.
Yes,
that's what I'm saying.
We did.
All right. Well, so should we give the numbers?
Let's give the numbers and we'll wrap it up. We are actually not recording this in advance, by the way.
No. This is recorded December 4th, posted December 4th.
Yeah, sorry we tweaked everybody last time.
Yeah, well, it happens. It's that or you miss an episode, and we don't want to do that to people.
No.
That's the worst.
Because they're counting, and they hold it against us.
Yeah, but if we're not talking about anything timely and it's mostly letters, you could probably guess that that's what happened.
Yeah.
Okay, the numbers. You can always tweet us at TVTM. I use that to pull the tweets out and read them on the show. You can email us podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. That will get to us. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine, and post there, because I also look there for comments and paste those into my little document that I read here. Tim is on Twitter @BastardMachine. I'm on Twitter @JSnell. And that's it. That's an episode.
That is. And one quick thing, people, come on, watch Agent X this weekend. Do it.
Do it. Get some wine, get some beer, get a beverage of your choice if you like.
Make it happen.
And watch Agent X, because you'll make our friend William Blake Heron happy. And I'm gonna loose change.
Love that. Yeah. Love that.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Tim. We'll talk to you next week. For real. It won't be a fake.